Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we get officially and underway, we've got three special presentations. The first one is is Justin here?
Yeah.
Please come forward. We are very fortunate. We're very fortunate in the city of Portland to have leadership and to have an organization that we partner with to make sure that our entrepreneurs, our small businesses, succeed. And in a lot of cities, it's important, but in the city of Portland, it's triply important because over 80% of folks that work in the city of Portland do so at businesses, 10 or less employees. And so more Portlanders are working at more small businesses per capita than almost any other city in the United States. It's unique. It's a source of incredible innovation. It's a source of incredible talent, development of talent. But it's also a vulnerable resource and a vulnerable strength, and that we always have to be caring and feeding for our small businesses. So I'm very pleased today to have with us Venture Portland. And before I read the proclamation, I'd like to introduce the president and his colleagues to talk a little bit about Venture Portland. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Justin Zellner. I'm the president of Venture Portland. Along with me is Heather Hale, our executive director, and Brian Alfano, our vice president. Approximately 50 unique business districts thrive in Portland. Since 1986, Venture Portland has supported these business districts with much-needed training, technical assistance, support, thinking about the development of our emerging business districts as well. We also provide grant funding, and in financial terms, since 1986, Venture Portland has infiltrated over $1 million of investment into the business districts of Portland. That has been matched by $3 million worth of private dollars that our business districts have been able to raise on their own. Portland neighborhood business districts represent 16,000 primarily local and small businesses. That supports over 200,000 jobs in our local economy and really makes what Portland is from a special presence. Things that we all appreciate about Portland. While serving the diverse communities that surround them, Portland's neighborhood business districts also meet regional, national, and international trade for goods and services and support our local economy. Last month, in fact, over 20 new small businesses opened in the city of Portland. Those boutiques and eateries, healthcare providers, those join a legion of locally owned retail, manufacturing, and service businesses that already define our great city. The reality of today's economic activity requires creativity and a commitment to work together for business owners, our residents, our community, and our government partners. I hope you'll join Venture Portland in honoring the small businesses that make our city special by looking for the Portland Celebrate Small sign that you'll see, and you already see up and out over our community. By doing so, you're really honoring our local small businesses, and we want you to do that when you're thinking about shopping and spending your dollars. This week, in fact, May 20th through 26th, is National Small Business Week, and a great time for us to recognize, celebrate, and support the small businesses that power Portland's economy. So I know Sam has a proclamation to read, and we really appreciate the fact that our government partners are stepping up and putting some much-needed magnification of what makes our city so great. Thank you.
Would you like to say anything?
No, we appreciate you reading the proclamation and calling this. Well, we'll let you read it. But
well, very good. Let's get to it. Thank you. We really appreciate all your work. It's amazing. Whereas Portland is a small business city, and whereas Portland's rate of 28 small businesses per 1,000 residents is one of the highest in the country, and whereas more than 95% of Portland businesses have fewer than 50 employees, and whereas 76% of Portland businesses employ between 1 and 10 people, and nearly three-quarters of net new jobs in Portland are created by small businesses, and whereas Portland's neighborhood business districts are home to almost two-thirds of these businesses, and whereas Portland's neighborhood business districts include approximately 16,000 businesses and nearly 200,000 jobs, and whereas May 20th through 26, 2012 is National Small Business Week, and whereas Venture Portland supports neighborhood-based businesses, many of which are small, now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim May 20th through May 26, 2012 to be Small Business Week here in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this week by supporting small local businesses. Thank you. Want to get a quick picture with us? Who's got the camera? You got the camera.
It's an important part.
Yeah.
Ready? 1, 2, 3. And we can just turn the candy a little closer.
Special guests from, if you want to come up.
Thank you, Mayor, for the exception. Council members, my name is Mark Jackson, Director of Reed Incorporated, Region Empowering Young People. In the spirit of the Portland Plan, part of the objective is to find ways to increase student voice. And this morning we have two Reed ambassadors from Ron Russell Middle School, one in 8th grade, one in 7th grade, is going to address the council this morning. And I want to also just add as a precursor, as we move in this year, I want to just ask the mayor and the council members to consider the month of September as a proposed proclamation for student voice. And all that's going on with education reform and all the budget cuts, it's important to keep the voice of students at the table as we shape the landscape of our future. Thank you so much.
Hi, welcome.
Hello. My name is Sebastian Rico, and I go to Ron Russell Middle School, and I'm a Reed ambassador, and I have a dream that one day all men and women of all color will have the same education opportunity and success rate before and after college. We should put our differences aside and focus on the bigger picture. Education equals prosperity. Like my good friend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, an individual has not started living until he can rise above the narrow confines of his individualistic concerns to the broader concerns of all humanity. We as humans, since we were created, have always been arguing about which ethnic group is best. I believe that this disagreement is dishonorable and we need to put an end to it. Why can't we put our differences aside and bicker about something else? We will never stop arguing, but let's not argue about each other's groups. I believe that if there was a program that taught students about other cultures, there would be less racism in Portland. My second concern is about education. I believe we need to put a bigger emphasis on education. I don't mean just in schools, I mean in the communities as well. For example, more food drives so that families that are in need will get the nutrition they need for their kids to be able to focus on school, not only at school, but at home as well. Another change could be better teachers. I don't just mean teachers that have a lot of experience. I mean teachers that can cooperate with the students and that students like. I think that most students would agree with this. Because who wants to learn when a teacher is very unlikable? Would you guys want to learn if a teacher is unlikable? I don't think I would. Why cut likable teachers for teachers that have more experiences yet the student body dislikes them? I believe a good teacher is one that's likable, yet can teach students to the fullest. As a new student counselor for my school, I try to see what the student body needs to be successful and also some reasonable things they want. Another concern that revolves around education is the testing, OAKS testing scores. A quote that I came up with is that we can accomplish the impossible, but if we have the resources that are needed. How does the state of Oregon as a whole raise test scores yet be at the bare bottom, yet most districts don't have enough money for their music program? I have exceeded all my folks' test scores, but I'm talking about students as a whole. If we look at it in the, at the state's perspective, we understand that this raising test scores would mean that students would try harder to achieve a better score. On the contrary, when I'm in the library, I have seen more students failing their tests. Many have to take a third round, and I asked them if they passed, and they said they still didn't pass. Those students that didn't pass were some of the students that didn't have the resources required to pass. By resources, I mean the money. I'm not complaining that Ron Russell Middle School is poor. Actually, I feel blessed to be at Haven Douglas School District, which still has many programs. Like, for example, I'm in middle school, and this year in band, we're going to march. Many middle schools have had to cut that marching because they don't have enough equipment, and they don't have the money to buy the equipment. I'm talking about those districts that the students refer to school lunch as a horrible lunch. I believe that if we put money into education, we as a whole country would be more prosperous. I'm going to wrap up my speech because I don't think it's very exciting when a 13-year-old is lecturing intelligent and adults about this topic as you guys. Even if you didn't listen to any of my speech so far, I want one thing to stick in your minds. We as Americans have designed nuclear missiles, overcame the Great Depression, started a government that all the other countries thought would fail, and beat a country as powerful and glorious as Great Britain, when we all had rags and a few weapons. Even though I was born in Romania, I'm proud to be an American citizen. Your forefathers understood three key ideas: always to persevere, education and equality equals prosperity, and they understood that the future is now. Have a great day, God bless.
Well done. Thank you very much.
Hi. You want to say hi?
Hi.
What grade are you in, and where do you go to school?
I'm in 7th grade at Ron Russell Middle School.
And what do you like to study the most, and why?
I like to study film studies because it talks about so many things.
Yeah. Well, appreciate you being here, and thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Thank you. I'd now like to, following on the issue of the importance of education, I'd like Gwen Sullivan to come forward, who's the president of the Important Teachers Association. It's a very difficult job, and she's here today at my invitation so that I have an opportunity to thank her and the union for the concessions that they made, which is important, and I ask you to summarize that. But more importantly is the ongoing effort each and every day that teachers in this city, in this school district, but throughout the city, the sacrifices that they make every day in working conditions that are more and more difficult, larger class sizes, more problems in the classroom, and yet we have made great improvements, and we continue collectively to bring better community support to the schools, but all that would be for naught if it wasn't for our great teachers. So I wanted to thank you for the sacrifices that you've made most recently and have you talk a little bit about them.
Thank you very much. Thank you. With our most recent tentative agreement, I'm here just to tell you about some of the things that our teachers, what was important to them, and how we came to this place, that the idea of cutting 110 teachers, we knew what that meant to our kids. We also knew that cutting school days, what that meant to our kids, and so we were desperately trying to find another solution. And so what we came up with was, with the city's help, that for the first time we have, and I'd like to say in our history, but I've only been here since teaching since 1995, but I can say since 1995 we've not ever done no step increases in our experience steps. This year, what we're looking at is we're looking at a delay in all of our steps, and that's something that was pretty unique. That saved quite a bit of money, We also know that for many years, our teachers, which is near half of them, that are at the top of the pay scale, haven't seen any sort of experience step in many years. So this was even more because they were finally supposed to get a 2%. But they did ratify this agreement and believe that it was important. So there's a delay in steps. There is also the high school teachers had won an arbitration award. And originally we talked about trying to figure out if we could give more of the money back that they won in this arbitration award. But then we found out that we wouldn't be able to bring back some of our special ed teachers. And it was really important that our special ed teachers be brought back as well. So we were looking at layoff areas in special ed, in library media specialists, in PE, in music, in art, and some English high school teachers as well. So we did take part of that arbitration award and put that toward this shortfall along with the steps. We also made sure that when that the kids would have a full school year, the whole 177 days, we wouldn't cut any school days. Also, we looked at making sure that, once again, certain areas were restored that really matter, especially our many of our most vulnerable kids that don't have access to music and art outside of the classroom. Those things were very, very important to make sure that we retain for some equity issues. As well as, I would say, our media specialists, which we often say media specialists, what we used to know as librarians of the past, they have new titles, they have many new jobs, but they are definitely the great equalizer in our schools, and so that was really important to make sure that they were brought back. We had some other proposals kind of packaged into this, too. We had unfair labor practice that was put in there, but we ended up being able to figure out some things together in this process. We wouldn't have necessarily been in this position without the city's help, that there was an opportunity to start having some dialogue that we haven't had. So, and then the last thing I would say that was really important to all of us with this agreement is that we've put together a forum for long-term stable funding for education, and that would be not only with the union and the district, but it would be with community, it would be with parents, it would be with city, county, that we need to figure this out. We can't be here every year. And I think we all know, the last speaker was talking about how education equals prosperity. I often say that education not only equals prosperity, but it equals happiness. There's something really great about having a city that is prosperous and happy. So those are some of the things that are in our agreement, and really, really appreciate the city's help and focus on that.
Thank you. Any questions or comments?
I just wanted to comment, thank you, Ms. Sullivan, for the leadership of the teachers, and to celebrate that in Portland, District 1J, we've been able to come to this agreement with significant investment from the taxpayers, as well as significant sacrifices from the teachers. And you're right, we cannot keep doing this. We need to go to Salem and get a statewide solution for adequate, stable school funding, and I'm committed to doing that in 2013.
Thank you.
So thank you, and please extend my thanks to your members.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Sue, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Can you please call the roll?
Fish. Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. Michelle, again, can you please read the title for item number 542?
542, request of Crystal Tenti to address council regarding budget cuts to the Family Services Division of the Portland Police Bureau.
Crystal, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Crystal Tenti, and I'm a domestic violence advocate with the Raphael House of Portland outstation with the Portland Police Bureau's Family Services Division. And I'm here today to thank you all for protecting funding for the Family Services Division, specifically for the Domestic Violence Reduction Unit. I've been working in the field of advocacy in Portland for 6 years, the last two of which have been spent working alongside some of the most dedicated and compassionate police officers in Portland. This positive working relationship between officers and advocates provides numerous benefits for the survivors we work with and the larger community. Having an officer's support is incredibly valuable to me as an advocate because it allows me to be able to support victims and survivors in ways I would otherwise be unable to do. For example, in many high lethality cases where the offender is not in custody, I would be unable to do outreach or do home visits with survivors without officer accompaniment. Additionally, our partnership affords me a huge increase in access to information, specialized knowledge, and resources that are available to law enforcement. I can have officers run offenders in the system to check warrant status or criminal history. Having some background allows me to do better safety planning with victims and can help me in how I approach my outreach efforts. Just knowing how long the survivor and the abuser have been together, if they have children in common, if they live together, if there's a restraining order in place, and other types of information. Just having that knowledge prior to even contacting the victim or survivor allows me to have the resources available to them before I even meet with them in person and already plan for their safety prior to meeting with them. Another benefit of this partnership is the greater mutual understanding and mutual respect that arises between community-based advocates and law enforcement as we work together to support survivors and hold offenders accountable. Although we have different roles and come from different workplace cultures, I feel respected and supported by our officers, who are pretty great advocates themselves. Just to give you an example, last month one of our officers went with me to Home Depot to purchase door alarms and wooden dowels to increase the safety features in the homes of a couple of the survivors we were working with. We went to one of the survivors' homes together, and that officer cut the dowels with her own handsaw that she brought and fitted into the survivor's window as part of a home safety plan that we all came up with together. So this is just an example of how our officer advocate teams work together and are really committed to ensuring the safety of the survivors that we work with. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can you please read the title for item number 543?
Request of Michelle Kay to address council regarding support received from the Portland Police Bureau Family Services Division.
Hi, welcome. Glad you're here.
I've never done this, but I'm going to get sick here.
Don't get sick. We're really glad you're here. It's just us.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Michelle Kay, and I'm here on behalf of the Family Services Division of the Portland Police Bureau. I am a survivor of domestic violence, which benefited from a unit within the Family Services Division that you guys have considered cutting the funds to that unit. The funds would specifically affect police officers and advocates, the relationship to collaborate to help survivors navigate through the system. While working with this DVRU unit team, I worked closely with a domestic violence advocate, a police officer on my case, who 3 months into the case, as we're already set for trial, listened to 200 and something hours of phone conversations from the jail that he called because I remembered he had stated that he had done something on that recording. To me, that's above and beyond what any police officer would do. That police officer also, when my domestic violence advocate couldn't show up to a restraining order hearing, showed up with me and helped me and joked and kid and made me feel really, really comfortable. To cut the funds to this organization and the umbrella and every little pieces and underneath of it,
you'll be happy to know we're not cutting.
I know, and I'm going to get to the thank you part of that, but
okay.
I'm just going to make sure.
Okay? I want to make sure you knew there's a happy
ending.
Make sure. Okay, there's no cuts.
Okay.
There's no cuts to any
just
sworn.
Just in case.
No cuts to any sworn positions in police or fire.
Good. I think you should increase the funding, but another matter.
I wish we had that kind of a...
No. So, you know, it would just devastate the community, and not only with police officers in the community who have families and who also experience family members or neighbors or friend their children's friends who experience domestic violence. And if we cut all those fundings, it affects other systems, and those systems would be strained. You know, just like we were just hearing about the education system, you know. And I know that funding is limited, and it's hard to budget it all and make everybody happy. And I'm really glad to hear that you're not cutting this funding, and that's why I'm here today, to thank you all very much for not cutting the funding. Because CATS and DIVERT in this Family Services Division needs this funding, and they need to have the police officers and the advocates that work together, because it's a huge collaboration to just benefit this whole project. And I'm really glad to be a part of it. And that was the best experience of my life. It changed me forever. I have been able to do things that I've never done before, like come here. Oh, I'm getting beeped. Training videos for the police department, other videos for other agencies. So, thank you.
Well, thanks for that. You did incredibly well. And thank you for, well, congratulations for your perseverance and your courage for surviving all that, but then going on and being an advocate for others. Thank you for that. Appreciate it very much. Can you please read the title to item number 544?
544, request of Sharon Nassett to address council regarding Columbia River Crossing.
Ms. Nassett? Sharon, you're here. All right, can you please read the title for item number 545?
Request of Kaya Stern to address council regarding education and budget cuts.
Welcome.
Right,
your own cheering section. That's
great. Yeah. Hi, my name's Kaya Stern, and I'm from Grant High School. What's school supposed to get us ready for? Life? College? Well, see, some of us don't get the privilege to go to college, so school should be getting us ready for life. If you think that budget cuts won't be too bad because there will be enough teachers to teach every subject, you're wrong. You can't learn it all from one teacher. I mean, personally, I think that each different teacher lets students make their own educated opinions and beliefs based on their teachings. We're here today because we're upset that our education is being attacked, and we need your help. On May 1st, we came to the steps of City Hall, and we asked for help. Mayor Sam Adams stood in front of us, and he listened to us. He understood how dire this situation is, and he was asking City Council to give monies to our schools and bandage up this wound. Listen, we want you to vote for this, but we don't want people to think that this Band-Aid will fix all of our problems, because it won't. From here, we need to go to Salem and tell legislatures just how important funding the future is. Firefighters, fight fires. Teachers, teach. Students learn, and legislatures, they're supposed to figure out how to fund our schools. And as far as we're concerned, they're not doing their job. We're students that are trying to make a difference in this world, and we will very soon be adults. But if students aren't educated, the votes of the future will be votes of ignorance. Is that what you want? I mean, education is the glue that holds our society together, and for too long, budgets for schools have been getting smaller and smaller, and we want change. It has to stop. We want to learn. It is a gift to have a generation that generally... It's a gift to have a generation... Let me see if I can talk here. Okay. It's a gift to have a generation that genuinely wants to learn. But how can you expect us to learn if there's no money to teach us? So think. Think about what your teachers taught you. Think about all the opinions and morals and ideals you got from your schools and your teachers. Please don't take that away from us. Your vote to support schools will buy us time in this next year. Before this band-aid has to get ripped off, we want you to go with us to Salem and make our legislators and our governors see that education is our future, and our future is not something to be overlooked. All we need is just one, just one of you to work with us and make the bridge between city and state government. You are more powerful than you know, and together, students and city council, I think we can make a pretty good team. And just as we are your future, you are our lifeline. So please, take a stand and support our schools.
Good job. Appreciate that very much. Very well done. And I do want you to know how much I appreciate. I said on the steps of City Hall, but I want to say it again, how much I appreciate your advocacy. And that made a real difference. The media coverage around that and the folks that you talked to and that you advocated to, it made a real difference. So thank you for that. Thanks for being here. You're welcome to stay and watch democracy happen, or you can leave. We will not be offended. Oh, you better get to school.
Yeah.
Thanks. Karen, good to see you.
So they have
them.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you please read the title for item number 544?
544, request of Sharon Nassett to address council regarding Columbia River Crossing.
Ms. Nassett, welcome back.
Good morning. Nice to see you. And I actually like these days. I've been here several times for all kinds of good meetings. For the record, my name is Sharon Nassett, and I certainly are not surprised I'm here to talk about the Columbia River Crossing Project. I have recently had the opportunity to be in Salem for the oversight hearings as an invited guest, as well as members of the Smarter Bridge Committee and others. And as you know, the Washington legislators have also started an oversight committee. And they will start their meeting in June 19th in downtown Vancouver. Everybody is finding many concerns and issues with the current process. And first up, I'd like to thank Councilmember Fritz for getting back to me on information that I'd said before. And I've been very pleased with working with her and how much she has come out to our community on a regular basis, even in non-election years. What I'm here today to talk about is I have provided you with a letter, two letters, one from the signature sponsor council, which is RTC, Regional Transportation Council in Washington, and one from the CTRAN board, the Board of Clark County Commissioners. And the very last sentence, it says that the third bridge and or an option next to the Burlington Northern Rail, whether it's a freeway like ours or another's, was not vetted. Not only was it not studied, but not vetted. And in the chambers and in many meetings, CRC has said over and over that it was studied and studied thoroughly. The signatory agencies looked into it very much in depth. Clark County Commissioner Steve Stewart was given the task, and he said it was definitely not studied. Before we can do what we are talking about doing to Jansen Beach, which I emailed you many things and you may not be able to see this, but we are talking about a 400-foot berm, 50 feet high, 39 businesses, 27 homes, and 11 years of construction on I-5. And now, in enough time, because the record of decision is not final until June 3rd, we have found out that no, they did not consider other alternatives or options. They have not followed the process. Before you can get a path for those people to give up their homes and for us to have regional, 11 years of construction on I-5, the sound of beep, beep, beep forever, we need to look at our alternatives and options, because not only is that required of the NEPA law, but that is why it's local. That's why they say it is the local decision makers. Because you look in the eye and you say, we have done everything possible. We have looked at all the alternatives. We have looked at the benefits and impacts. And we are going for the least impact. And without studying those alternatives, you cannot say that And I believe you want to. I'm often said, why do I continually go to council meetings after 12 years? Now, a lot of people have given up. Because you run for an office because you believe you make a difference. I'm asking that you look at this, have a conversation, and send a letter to the governor and the oversight committee. There's no risk. The person that said Bill Baby Bill didn't even get 21%. Those that have been against it, including in the Metro Council hearings against CRC, or know it needs to be changed, are the only ones that have won. So I thank you very much for your time. I would really like this to happen very soon. Somebody needs to be courageous enough to pull the plug. I think you have that ability.
So Ms. Nassif, what do you think the significance of the second paragraph in this letter means to you?
Actually, I handed in all of my copies.
It talks about the fact that the corridor was studied, but it was found, quote, not to show a significant traffic, doesn't significantly relieve traffic congestion to any significant degree on the I-5 Columbia River Bridge corridor. Since I sat through this process, that definitely was my experience, that we definitely looked at the corridor. The corridor didn't show the benefits that were the purpose of the project, and therefore the actual structure over the river wasn't studied. But I wanted to give you a chance to respond to that.
I would be happy to. First off, the corridor and the project that I am talking about that attaches to I-5 as a freeway and goes across the river and over to Highway 30 was never studied. What they did study was an arterial road that went from Mill Plain Boulevard across to Marine Drive, less than 1 mile, when ours is 7 miles, was an arterial road that had four stop signs and a lift and carried 48,000 vehicles a day and was full upon opening. And they never studied anything further to see how much more of 48,000 it would carry. The current bridge carries about 135. So we are talking about that is in the range of 30%, and that is from Mill Plain with no attachments to I-5 on either end and ending at Mill Plain. And that's 48,000 vehicles. So although they did not study our project, and they did not study something that could actually work because it was full upon opening, that statement in there is to clarify because it was a very political event. And I involved myself and answered the call and brought in a project that was a freeway that attaches to I-5 at Mill Plain that goes all the way over to Highway 30, was 3 lanes in each direction, 2 center-managed lanes, and new commuter rail that is paid for by light rail. And that was not steady. But what they have done, they took our name, they took maps off of the thing, and they continually say it was studied, to the point that RTC looked at it and it says very clearly was not studied. Did they study something they knew that would fail? Yes.
So thank you. I wanted to give you a chance to respond to that second paragraph.
I appreciate that. And
nice
I hope
to
that
see
that,
you.
Nice to see you. Hey, you know, when
I
tried to
move
to
this
see
along. I've got to move this along.
Yes.
All right. Sue, would you please read the title for item number 546?
546, request of Victoria Taft to address council regarding garbage rates and urban renewal.
Ms. Taft. Hi, welcome.
Thank you. Got my bag with me, several copies of my testimony here today, and thank you very much for letting me speak before this august group of people. I am Victoria Taft. I was born in Portland and Multnomah County. I live in the city of Portland currently. I'm a constituent and I'm a taxpayer. And I'm here today because recently you've been considering the idea of raising garbage and water rates again. And I'm here to ask you to please not do that. And I'd like to introduce you to another kind of Portland because I have a feeling that it's a Portland with which you're not familiar. There are people who come here every day asking for things, and it's gleeful and wonderful to be able to give them everything they seek. But, you know, the rest of us are out busy working to be able to pay the bills that we have to do to get right every single month and continue to keep up with what they're asking us to pay. So I'd like to introduce you to the other Portland and hear a few of their stories
A young couple saved up, bought a house against my advice in the city of Portland. And he now daily complains of bag bans and forced composting and higher costs passed on by you. And they don't know if they can afford your next whim. Another couple I know were forced by this recession and recent employment setbacks to downsize their house, but chose to live outside the city of Portland because they can't predict future costs. There's no predictability. They don't know if they'll be able to afford to stay. And they think that a council that thinks its job is to do everything instead of sticking to what's in the charter is a dangerous pact to make. A neighbor came by the other day to talk over the fence with me about what's going on in the hood, and I had not seen him for a while because he has moved his business to another state. Now he'd like to move everything out. What measures 66 and 67 started, you are likely to finish for this guy. Another neighbor stops by on his bike route every day in front of my house. We feed the dogs and chat about his and his wife's business, and they have moved that business out of the city of Portland and to Hawaii, because Hawaii's cheaper. It's so expensive here that I know a family whose main breadwinner had to take a job over 1,000 miles away to keep up with the growing costs of living in the city of Portland. There aren't many jobs here, but the expenses are certainly here. There are certain roads I cannot drive on because you won't fix them. The Victoria Taft Show is producing a calendar for next year. We're calling it the Portland Pothole Calendar. Photo submissions are welcome. The current urban renewal areas on the books between 2010 and 2015, by the PDC's own estimate, will deprive the very Portland public schools that you give $10 million to or $7.5 million to up, in fact, $163 million. Now you've announced plans to start 7 new urban renewal areas. Urban renewal areas, as you know, siphon money from basic services like education, fire, and police. Fire and police are your core functions in the city of Portland. You're laying off Portland police officers or command staff. Now, because you allowed your personal political beliefs to color your response to Occupy Portland, allowing them to trash the parks and incur unnecessarily long police overtime, now you come back to us, the law-abiding, and ask us to pay for it. I know it's fun to give money away to charities and good causes and schools and grant programs, PCC and sustainability centers. I know it's all fun, but you're spending other people's money so you can feel charitable. That's not charity. That's stealing. And there are people who have been picking up the tab for years, and they're spent, and they're tired, and I'm one of them. That's the other Portland, and we would ask that you not raise taxes and fees on us. Very sincerely. Thank you.
Sue, can you please read the title to item number 547?
Excuse me.
You can just get the paper to Sue.
Sorry. I'd be very happy to. But I do want you to have a copy.
No, she'll get it to us.
Okay.
I'm sorry, we'll do consent first.
Okay, I was out of order.
We have three polls. I need to pull 556. I put it in the wrong place by mistake.
Right.
And 557, 558, your office requested those be put back to your office.
Okay, can you please read their titles?
556 is authorized River District Urban Renewal and Development Refunding Bonds.
So that's moved to the regular agenda?
Correct, thank you.
557?
557, ratify a letter of agreement with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Local 189, to increase the compensation of represented employees in the surveyor classification series. And 558 is change the salary range for the non-represented classification of survey supervisor.
That's what you're about. Unless such objection, all right, any other polls from the consent agenda? Sue, can you please call a vote on the consent agenda?
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Now, would you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance time circuit 547?
Amend fee schedules for building electrical, mechanical, plumbing, facilities permit, field issuance remodel, land use services, neighborhood inspections, noise control, signs, site development, zoning, and certain construction permits.
Commissioner Dan Salzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This item is the first reading for the Bureau of Development Services new fee schedule for the fiscal year 2012-2013. Along with the construction industry, the Bureau of Development Services has begun to recover from the Great Recession, and the Bureau's workload has been increasing. I probably don't need to remind this council that DDS lost over half of its staff in the recession and is now being pushed to its limit on processing building permits. This new fee schedule will allow DDS to add staff to meet workload demands and facilitate much-needed development. Before making any recommendations on fees, the Bureau works with industry partners through forums like the Development Review Advisory Committee. We have an active mayor today representing the Development Review Advisory Committee, or RAC as it's known. The Bureau Budget Advisory Committee also participates, and then the Small Business Advisory Council has also participated to determine the appropriate level of service for particular aspects of the development process. And it's important to note that the Bureau has already implemented many efficiencies and streamlined essential services. And when I was assigned to the Bureau over a year ago, the financial forecast called for fees in this year to increase an average of 8%. I'm pleased to say that we have lowered presenting data fees that on average are 5% increases rather than 8%. But this increase is critical to keeping the Bureau's financial plan solvent, as well as pushing the implementation of the new Information Technology Advancement Project, an incredibly important project that has the strong support of our industry and community partners, as well as the state of Oregon. But let me be clear, we do recognize that no one wants to pay more for these services, so we attempted to strike a balance here and to propose moderate fee increases that will allow the Bureau to respond to customers' needs while better aligning revenues with expenditures. So staff will go into more detail. I'll please now to turn it over to the Bureau's Director, Paul Scarlett.
Good morning. Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. Good morning, Mayor Adams, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Leonard. Paul Scarlett, Bureau of Development Services Director. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning to share with you the Bureau's proposal for fee increases for fiscal year 2012-2013. There are a number of criteria that were used in the fee proposal. As Commissioner Saltzman has indicated, a big aspect of our operation is to be collaborative, to have input from our industry partners, our customers, our employees, and that was no different this year. It's an aspect of our operating Bureau, which includes a major part of our funding comes from fee revenues, commit fee revenues. To that end, we certainly include as much as we can the input from all of our customers and employees. There are a number of criteria that have been used over the years, including gradual fee increases. We certainly don't want to have a dramatic changes in 1 year or 2 years. And we have a five-year plan, we use that as a gauge. We also ensure that the fee increase connect with the service level and the performance goals that's been established and has had endorsement from our customers and industry partners. We also make sure that the increases are essentially there's a connection or correlation between the increase that comes from internal inflation, such as cost of living increases or administrative costs, such as overhead or benefits. And so the fee increases help to offset those increases as well. This year's fee increases aligned itself well with the budget. We identified a number of crucial or significant areas, such as cost recovery, which is similar to previous years. Staffing level is certainly a big part this year. Service improvement. And a big part, which Commissioner Saltzman just mentioned, ITAP, or Technology Improvement. We are also focused on looking at our operation, and the biggest part of our operation is, and resources are our personnel. 49% of our staffing level, our staff currently are of retirement eligibility in the next 5 years. The workforce planning and succession planning is a big focus. We have increases that's focused on training and making sure that we have the right staffing and level staffing in place. So a number of things. Again, cost recovery 100% is our goal, and in some cases it's not at 100%. We will increase costs gradually to reach that. We use a 5-year plan. Staffing level, we're currently at 180. 4 years ago, we're at 315. The proposal in the mayor's budget proposal, it includes 17.6 positions. We're anticipated and expect and excited to get those positions, of course, get us close to 200. Service level improvements. We certainly are doing a lot better than a couple of years ago. Our inspection turnaround timelines, our plan review timelines have improved. Customer service level has improved. So we're focused on those areas, and with the additional staffing, that should improve correspondingly. Bureau reserves, that's another part of our budget requirement. With the 5-year plan, we have reserves for, as we experience, unfortunately, to weather the storm when there are downturns. And our reserves are rebuilt. A couple years ago, we had 13 million. We went down to about 500,000. We're now close to about 7.5 million. So we're very excited. I didn't have this news to share with you last year. So things are improving. And a big part of that is, of course, the uptick in the economy. We are seeing a slight increase. We're benefiting from that greatly. About 3% growth rate is anticipated for next year. The increase helps to offset the growth rate with the expenses. The 17.6 positions are going to cost about $2.1 million. Growth rate of 3% equals about $1 million. Fee increases of generally 5% equals to about $1 million. So two additional $1 million is expected from growth rate, and the increases helps to pay for the expenses of 17.6 additional staff. So those type of balancing act and pieces are the particulars of our budget and fee increase planning process. It's one that we roll up our sleeves and we really dive in with the Development Review Advisory Committee, with our employees, our customers. We have not forgotten, and it's not lost on us in the recession and the challenges, that customer service is still paramount to our operation. We pride ourselves in going to be provide the best service possible, and we look forward to improving our services. And that's something I'm very excited about, and I believe we all collectively share that goal. I will say that a couple of highlights, and I know we were very humble in asking for loans, operating loans to carry us during the tough times. $1.5 million was renewed last year. I'm glad to say that we'll be able to repay that loan end of June, and will not be asking for another re-up of that loan. So that's good news. The loan to pay for the Information Technology Advancement System Program, which is, of course, aimed at improving customer access, plan review electronically, like digitization of all of the records so customers and employees can access that information, will cut down on time, it will be more efficient. We came to council a couple of years ago, asked for a loan that was initially approved. We've since then put that process in hold and gone through an extensive RFP process, and three vendors have made it through that process. As we speak, they're in the 1900 building doing a presentation today, one of three. I was there for a little bit, had to run away to here. That loan, we have full confidence that we will be able to repay the loan within the next 5 years. And we were initially approved $6.6 million, I believe. They're based on our reserves, based on the uptick in the economy, project types, which are not the usual type over the last couple of years, which has been mostly small projects, tenant improvement, remodeling. Now our large projects of 700,000, we have like 70 unit apartment buildings, large construction type, which of course benefits us greatly. So we're very happy about that. And the other thing, I would be remiss if I didn't thank the mayor as part of his budget that includes a re-up of 7 one-time general fund positions. That will continue to aid us in addressing property maintenance nuisance issues and the tree project position to maintain the momentum that's in place to develop a citywide tree project. So we're very grateful about those inclusion in the budget and look forward to the adoption and, of course, the effectiveness of that come July 1st. So with that, I will turn it to Denise Klein to talk a little bit about some of the specifics of the fee increases, and Ed McNamara will share his views on the Bureau's fee increase. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. I'm Denise Klein with the Bureau of Development Services, Administrative Services Manager. So I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about the outreach that we do with our stakeholders. It's quite extensive. Commissioner Saltzman mentioned a few of the folks that we talk with. We also talk to a lot of industry representatives, the electrical contractors, plumbing contractors, mechanical contractors, remodeling contractors, met with building owners and managers, Portland Business Alliance, Port of Portland, the city's land use chairs, home builders. There's several others, about 20 different organizations. And I'm pleased to say that they aren't here in mass protesting the fee increases. Because we work with them quite a lot, and they do understand the services we provide, and we spend a lot of time actually considering their input and ideas and making changes to our operations. And we also have a very open book in terms of our finances and our books, and share with them and try to answer and be responsive to their questions. So I wanted to let you know how much we do. We also put out information in our newsletters and sent emails to all of these organizations. We spent quite a lot of time, as Commissioner Saltzman spoke about, really looking at how high these fee increases need to be. And for most programs, they're 5%. So that would include the building, the mechanical, the signs, the inspections, land use. There's two programs that will not have fee increases, and that's the facilities permit program and the site development program. And that's because in looking at their five-year projections for both staff and revenue and costs, their cost recovery rate is adequate and their reserves are adequate, so there's no need to increase their fees. We are increasing the field issuance remodel program fees by 2.8%, so less than 5%, because they really did not need a 5% fee increase. So we're really careful and look under every rock for looking to see how we can. The other thing I want to let you know about is our land use fees. We spent quite a lot of time based on community input on several of our fees in the fee schedule and made some significant changes to how the fees are charged. So we heard a lot from the community on the design historic review fees and also the comp plan amendments with zone map amendment fees, where if you're a small business or a property owner, we heard from the community that they felt that these were too high. So what we did was, currently we have kind of a one-size-fits-all fee. What we did, Rebecca Esau, our land use services division manager, spent hours and hours coming up with some very innovative ways of stratifying those fee schedules and ensuring that the small guy pays less. Because those projects actually take us less time to review and deal with. So we did make some changes there also in our adjustment reviews for residential debt expenses, and we made some adjustments there. So in those cases, we did lower fees and areas. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Comments? Okay, let's see. Is anyone signed up?
No,
oh, I'm sorry. No,
it's okay.
It's all such good news. I'm ready to support it.
My name is Ed McNamara. I'm here on behalf of the Development Review Advisory Committee. And as you probably know, we are a group of a broad cross-section of the development community, both large and small, contractors, developers, designers, engineers, architects, institutional users like the board and neighborhood associations that meet monthly with the development staff, both from BDS and from the other bureaus that are involved in development review. We did vote to support these fee increases, and I just want to add 3 points about that. I think as Commissioner Salton said, we don't like fee increases. We're really concerned about keeping costs down on development. But we also know that it's fine to support them when there's a demonstrable benefit. That's the first point. Second point is we really need this increased service level, the predictability that comes with it. I think Paul was horribly modest in talking about how he's had to manage for the last couple of years with a greatly reduced staff, reduced much more than the service was reduced. There were a lot of small projects coming in that were just as time-consuming, but paid very small fees. And I built a project during that time. We got our permit on time, and our inspections kept us going, and that's really critical. You know, at the end of the project, the interest cost on a large building that I was doing were over $4,000 a day. So a missed inspection is a very expensive process. So we're really grateful to that. The way that Paul and the whole staff pitched in to try and make things work. But they've been working in a tough position. We need to get those services back, both for the current workload and for the workload that's coming in. We need that staff there before the fees come in to do the initial processing, to do the pre-application meetings and things like that. So to keep that development stream coming back that benefits the city and the neighborhoods, we need to get in those positions. So that's my second point. We need that. The third point, it's something that Jack's been concerned about. I think what we're saying is we also need your help to contain costs. The Jack, I'd say particularly the architects and engineers who've been cutting their fees for the last 3 or 4 years regularly, that had a very difficult time watching personnel costs and benefits and salaries and cost of living increases go up, at a much higher, what appeared to be a higher rate than the cost of living for most people, and certainly for a higher rate in the industry. We recognize that there are contracts that have been negotiated before that began, and there wasn't anything that the management could do to contain that. But I think that's still been difficult for the industry to watch, the mismatch between the way the industry has cut fees and lowered cost and the increasing cost of personnel, salary, benefits that have led to some of the increases. So I think all we'd like to do is to urge you in future contract negotiations to really try and pay attention as much as possible, first to the impact of those increases and to thinking about ways that those can be a little bit better aligned with the economy, with unpredictable changes in the economy. We don't know how you do that, but I feel on behalf of DRAC, I need to present that. That's a constant topic for us. So, in short, we do urge to support these. 5% is something that raises everybody's eyebrows the first time they hear it. The actual cost on a project is relatively small because the permit fees are not a large part of our project budgets. You know, my last project, they went about $1.50 a foot. So a 5% increase is about 8 cents a foot. It's not dramatic compared to, say, a system development charge that now is about $23 a foot. So we urge just what these increases to get the service level back and to keep development going.
Just for you to be able to take back, thanks for your services. Non-represented employees issue will not have a merit pay increase or cost of living increase in 2 years ago. Is that right? We had no cost of living increases for the city. Is that right? Citywide.
No, we realized it.
So you can take it back. Your point is fair and well made, but we are working on some of those things.
We appreciate that.
Thanks.
So, did you want
to
make a point and then ask a question? I'm really heartened to hear that the reserves are back to $7.5 million. What a turnaround that is from a couple of years ago when Denise and Paul and I, and probably we each agree that probably our most challenging time in public service was the layoffs of half of the employees. It was a horrible time, and we had to use the reserves and come to council and borrow, and now it's really heartening to hear that's going to be repaid. And I know firsthand, at least as well as anybody else, how hard the staff works to maximize the resources they have to facilitate permits now versus a decade ago, for example. It is a very collaborative and problem-solving process, and I appreciate that. The only concern is that all we can do is what we can within the structure that exists, and the one I think significant change that will speed up that process is computerizing the permit system. And so you were saying that there are RFPs that you're actually listening to presentations to today. And just so people know, I mean, currently we still process everything via paper, and people have to bring in sets of plans, and we're unique. And I think Ed would recognize that. And the metro area amongst major cities, in that we haven't already caught up with technology and allow plans to be permitted via the internet or permits issued electronically. And so, what is the timeline for that project to be online and be available for people to utilize?
Well, we're looking at implementation date of winter 2014. Still the vendor presentation and the negotiations and the sort of implementation, which is still a two-year time frame. And with the RFP, added some more time to the process, but we feel that we, in the long run, a successful change in the process. And we are feeling pretty confident that the three that made it through the RFP process are very competitive and will, at the end of the day, provide us the services that we need to meet the objectives of electronic plan review, like you're saying, that anywhere in the world, not just the U.S., yeah, someone can do business with us remotely, including our field staff. So it's still a ways out, but we are doing some things that are along the way. For example, with the existing technology system we have, the tracks, improving that so they can have better access for employees and customers. But this process takes a while.
So the last time I had anything to say about this, what was very significant was that system be able to interact with the state,
yes,
system. Does, yes, the RFP require that whatever system can be in place interact with the state system?
Yes, that was one of the requirements.
Excellent.
Commissioner Lunder, I'd like to just add one thing to that. Well, two things to that. First, I think everybody on track recognizes that it's been the staff pitching in that's really made it work through these last couple of years, and you know, keeping the level of service up, and morale was tough. I joined the DRAC around the time those cuts had hit the worst, so it was tough. So you know, we appreciate that. The same thing is, you're right. The way we really change this efficiency is this technology. But what's also going on during this process is, and you know, Paul said lots going on. We're digitizing all the records so that everything's going to be ready. But every department is going through every step of this process of its flow chart for how we do the intake and how we do the process and how we do the approval. As you can imagine, there's a lot of steps and there's a lot of sequences. And the DRAC members are involved in that with staff. But what they're really impressed with is the DRAC members are that every department is trying to cut out every unnecessary step in that process now before we build it into the technology system. So we're not only getting the benefit of the technology, but we're going to get the benefit of a fresh look at how we do things and what steps are necessary and what sequences and how we do it. So the staff has continued to pitch in to find more ways to make that technology improvement even more efficient than it would be otherwise. So
that's the first time I've heard that, but I'm not surprised to hear that. And the staff at BDS is excellent, and particularly the management staff.
Yeah, so it's been great work.
So before they leave, I just want to take this opportunity to thank the Bureau staff for all they've done. I think Denise mentioned in particular work on stratifying fees for comp plan changes and making our design or our historic design review process more user-friendly. I know that both Susan Anderson of Bureau of Planning Sustainability and Paul have come up with a plan to really try to streamline or simplify some of the historic design review processes, and also maybe remove things like a window in the backyard from historic design review, things like that, that there seems to be a wide consensus on. So I want to thank Rebecca Esau as well for their work. And thank Ed and all the draft members. And I think it's really, this agency really is sort of the city's canary in the coal mine. It is 95% supported by fees. So when the economy is doing well, this bureau is doing well. And so is the rest of the city. That's general fund and our business license fees. So thank you. But it's very sensitive to change. So it's good to be here today to hear about we're adding staff because we're seeing more work. And that bodes well, I think, for all of us.
Thank you very much.
Before you leave, I also want to add my thanks. Denise Klein did an amazing job over the course of this challenges and been very helpful in giving us the information and stuff. And Director Scarlett, thank you for your leadership. And as a member on behalf of the Development Advisory Committee, it's really good to hear your perspective. And I know that there are many other voices at that table that are working together. And so I just want to thank Commissioner Saltzman for his leadership, and really glad to hear that we're back on sound fiscal footing.
Good work, everybody. Anyone signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
Anyone wish to testify on this matter? All right, moves to a second reading, council consideration next week. That gets us to, can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance, item number 569.
Amend regulations of safety and conduct for the Portland streetcar, City of Portland property.
Shoshana, are you going to deal with this? Come on up. So can you give a very, very brief overview of what we're looking at here?
Good morning. My name is Shoshana Osner. I'm from Bureau of Transportation. Ordinance in Grandview is an administrative ordinance, and with the expansion of the streetcar service to the east side, it requires the Bureau of Transportation to orient itself more to broaden our customer service and safety orientation of the Bureau. So this ordinance,
doesn't it just reflect what TriMet's doing? We're adopting the same kind of standards of conduct that TriMet has.
Well said.
Excellent. Any questions for Shoshana? I thought I was supposed to invite you up, and I was surprising you. I didn't mean to surprise you.
I've been in that spot many times.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
No. Okay, tell us about baseball.
so for that, that's my understanding. That's way outside of my purview.
So for that, to the team effort here, it's my understanding that we haven't previously had rules for operation of conduct of passengers and on the streetcar, and we're adding fare inspectors. Is that part of this?
You'll see an ordinance coming after the budget for fare inspectors. We're adding two positions that will allow us to enforce these code amendments. So by adopting these code amendments, it puts in place the ability to provide a more consistent transit experience for our customers, as well as to provide that fare inspection to the population.
All right, thank you. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter? All right, moves to further consideration.
Mayor, I was just going to inform the council that transportation worked closely with the city attorney's office in developing these proposed rules. So
great.
There were any questions.
And I'd also like to thank Toni Anderson in the city auditor's office. She was instrumental in the form that you see. She produced every bit of code that comes before council. That's incredible.
Great. All right. Moves to second reading for the council consideration next week. Can you please read the title to non-emergency ordinance item number 570?
570. Authorize a borrowing in an amount sufficient to produce not more than $25,211,000 in anticipation of the Fire and Police Disability and Retirement Fund levy for fiscal year 2012 to 2013.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. Jonas Beery, the city's debt manager. This is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance that authorizes issuance of up to $26 million in short-term tax anticipation notes to fund an annual cash flow deficit of the Fire and Police Disability and Retirement Fund. This is something that's requested every year around this time. The FPDNR Fund receives cash from the FPDNR property tax levy each November. Levy receipts are available to be spent throughout the end of the fiscal year, which leads to an annual funding gap to cover the period of July 1 until receipt of the levy the following November. Proceeds of these notes will fund that gap for July through November 2012. The notes will mature over no more than 13 months and will be secured and repaid by receipts from the fiscal year 2012-13 FPDNR levy. The notes will be sold via competitive bidding process in July 2012. One additional note, I think we mention this every year, but these notes present a rare instance where the federal government actually allows us to keep certain earnings that may be achieved through balances not spent. To the degree those earnings materialize, those are available to offset the cost of the bond. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Questions from the council? Thank you. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter? All right, moves to second reading for the council consideration next week. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance on item number 571?
Mayor, would you want to take 556, the item that was pulled? That's Jonas also.
Oh, it is Jonas?
Yeah.
Normally, we wait till the very end.
Okay.
But okay.
Thank you,
Maya. Can you read the title again?
556 is authorized River District Urban Renewal and Redevelopment Refunding Bonds.
Welcome back.
This emergency ordinance, 556, authorizes two separate but related actions. First, the ordinance authorizes issuance of urban renewal bonds to refund certain outstanding River District urban renewal bonds for debt service savings. The refunding component of this financing is expected to produce over $2 million in debt service savings through fiscal year 2022 through 2023. In addition to the refunding, a portion of the 2012 bond issue will convert an interim line of credit related to funding of the Resource Access Center, now known as Bud Clark Commons, to long-term bonds. Council has previously authorized issuance of these long-term bonds via Ordinance 183262 on October 21, 2009. However, issuance of this portion of the bonds requires certain additional specific actions under federal tax code, including publishing and holding a public TEFRA hearing that must be conducted prior to authorization. This TEFRA hearing was conducted on April 23, 2012, and no public comment was received, as described in Exhibit E to the ordinance. The 2012 bonds will be secured solely by a pledge of renewal revenues generated by the River District URA. We are requesting approval on an emergency basis, as is typical for refunding requests, so we may capture the currently favorable market environment and maximize debt service savings. We anticipate issuing the bonds in June and happy to answer questions.
Anyone wish to testify on this matter? All right, moves to.
Yes, thank
you. That was good. All right, Sue, can you please call the vote?
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz?
So this resale or refunding saves approximately $2.2 million through fiscal year 2022 to 23, $200,000 per year, about 5%. Good job. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance item number 571?
Assess property for sidewalk repair by the Bureau of Maintenance.
Hi, welcome back.
Every 3 months.
Yeah.
Sheriff Sam from the auditor's office, and this is for sidewalk repair that's required by the city, done by the city. And any remonstrances that we receive from this ordinance have been pulled from this ordinance, so everything's ready to go.
All right, questions from council? Does anyone wish to testify on item number 571? All right, moves to second reading for the consideration next week.
Do we have anything else?
That's
We're in recess till 2 p.m.